to go.
All right. Good morning and welcome to the July 26, 2011 San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Would you please join us and say the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Madam Clerk, could you be so kind as to read any changes to the agenda, please?
Certainly. That would be an add an item on consent under pending litigation, existing litigation, number 14, Southern California Pipeline Construction Incorporated versus the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, 15, County of San Luis Obispo versus Canada et al., 16, County of San Luis Obispo versus Michael J. Cavallero Ranches et al., LLC et al. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Those are your changes.
Okay, thank you very much. Just a quick announcement, too. We have been notified that our new cafe down the hallway there is officially open, the Liberty Cafe. For those of you who are in our building and wanting to grab something to drink or eat, it is now officially open, and I think it's an easy, convenient grab-and-go operation, or also sit and have a sandwich. So please visit our Liberty Cafe. And with that, we're going to move on to our consent agenda. And I have a few requests to speak, and they are all on A11 and A12. So I will call your name and have you come on up, and we'll go from there. Dr. C. Height, followed by Richard Margetson, please. Morning, Dr. Height.
Good morning, Dr. C. Height, Los Osos World Community Workshop. And I'm going to read A11 and A2, advocating for the people at home who can't get out to be aware of what's going on with their community. And A11 is request to, one, approve amendment number 4 to the agreement with Corello Engineers in the amount of $101,859 for engineers consulting services to prepare recycled water reports for the Los Osos Wastewater Project Second District. Recommend approval. A12, request to approve right-of-way documents accepting conveyance of a temporary construction easement from Philip D. Gray and Carolyn M. Gray, trustees, and authorize the public works director or designee to execute any remaining escrow-related documents for the Los Osos Wastewater Project Second District. Recommend approval. And so for the people at home who can't get out this morning and want to stay aware, I ask you to explain these because when you recommend approval, if someone doesn't speak up, actually no one at home even really knows unless they have internet access and can go online and see what's going on in the county. And I ask that you explain these two items because I like to make my opinions based on equal information, not what people tell me from one side or the other or you know, even necessarily from the county. You have some basic facts for the people. And so I'd like to hear, you know, your take on what these two items are and so I can make up my own idea about what's really going on for my community. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Height. Mr. Margetson, followed by Jeff Edwards. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. A11, first, the staff report says this is an approval of an amendment to an existing agreement for engineering consulting services with Corello Engineers to prepare recycled water reports for the Los Osos Wastewater Project that are required by state funding and permitting agencies. Under the description of the scope of work, on page 7, there's the last line, number 4. Specifically, this scope of work does not include, and then on the next page it talks about what it does not include. Does not include coordination with potential recycled water users as required to document the recycled water market per Appendix B, Item F2 of the Water Recycling Funding Program Guidelines. It also does not include water conservation is required by the CDP and is incorporated into the baseline assumptions for the water recycling analysis. Therefore, the water conservation reduction analysis suggested in Appendix B of the guidelines is not applicable. Water recycling is required by the CDP and only one alternative. Where have we heard that before? Only one alternative is being considered by the county. Therefore, the suggested evaluation in Appendix B of the guidelines is not applicable. And then further down, the county will provide letters of interest from potential recycled water users, draft recycled water mandatory use ordinance or model user contract, and draft necessary agreements for the facility plan appendices as applicable. I'm wondering what we're getting with regards to this report. It sounds like the county is going to be the one coordinating all of the agreements with potential users, not and it's separate from what is proposed in this consulting contract. My question at this point is, what do we have in the way of agreements with any potential users? You can develop all the plans you want, but to this point, what agreements do we have with potential users? Because I know there's certain farmers out in Los Osos that have actually come into the county and told them they have no intention of taking any of this water. I'm concerned another $100,000+, even though part of it's being funded by grants and stuff, what are we getting again for this money? This is very confusing. I think it's time for a Los Osos update again. I didn't even get to item A12, so I'll leave it at that, but this on consent calendar should have been an agenda item.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards, followed by Julie Tacker, please.
Thank you. Mr. Hill, board members, good morning. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 30-plus year resident of Los Osos and a longtime supporter of a wastewater project. Unfortunately, this morning I cannot agree with this amendment to an existing contract. In fact, I object vehemently. Corollo Engineers is just one of the many consultants that has bellied up to the bar on this project and fed off this project, well, you can only imagine. In any event, Corollo Engineers, coincidentally, is headquartered in Walnut Creek, California. This is just a couple miles from the offices of Montgomery Watts and Harza. You may remember those folks. And their offices are just across the parking lot from Camp Dresser and McKee. They're the folks that just got a $5 million contract awarded by this board for some services that are questionable, we'll say that. In looking at your staff report today, I have a number of questions. First of all, under the discussion section, it implies that the county has been repaid the $8.2 million owed. And I'd like to ask the question, has that occurred? If so, when? And then a follow-up question would be, when will we be getting an accounting of how the balance of those funds will be used? That is the $22 million minus the $8.2 million. That accounting would be helpful. With regard, let's talk about the recycled water program and why Corollo is even being considered here. The backdrop in Los Osos, as you may recall, is seawater intrusion. We have an advanced case of seawater intrusion that's threatening our domestic water supply. This whole notion of recycled water relies on agricultural users largely taking this water, though their wells aren't threatened by seawater intrusion, which is the case in Monterey, if you're familiar with the county pollution control facility up there. The ag users have good water, so they're not really motivated to take this. And I think that the future of this program and this concept really is in doubt, and I've expressed these views before. There's discussion about a $5 million grant from the state. And I've talked to the state about that. They want signed contracts from ag users and if urban users, if that's to be the case. And so I think this is a lot of form over substance, and I think that resources can be better directed. So again, I'd like to repeat my objection to another gift to Corolla engineers, and really reevaluate the whole concept of the recycled water program. With that, I will close. And their scope of work, if you look at the scope of work that they're proposing, it's all, we've all done this before. So this isn't new work. It looks like busy work to me. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Ms. Tacker, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, gentlemen. I am Julie Tacker, a 40-year resident of Los Osos and an interested party in the wastewater project. Today, I'd like to focus my comments on A12. This property that we're discussing is at the corner of South Bay Boulevard and Pismo Avenue. 15,000 cars a day pass this property. It is South Bay Boulevard is a scenic highway in the coastal zone. This staging area will be busy with construction traffic and piles of material. I would ask that you ask the contractors to keep it neat and tidy, because we are going to look at it for a very long time, and it is quite ugly. In 2005, that property was used similarly, but I believe Mr. Gray was compensated at a higher price. So I am questioning why the difference, and what is Mr. Gray going to get in addition to that. I think the community knows his motivation is to one day build on that site, but the coastal development permit does require you to restore it. There's really never been any specific noticing to the neighbors of that property that this is intense use will be going on there for some 3 to 5 years, and I think that would be prudent of your board and polite to let them know that, that the impacts of these staging areas will be impressed upon them daily. There's another staging area that you're not talking about today, and I don't know if there will ever be compensation for that property owner. I'm not really certain what the future of that property is, and that property is the Tri-W site, downtown Los Osos. Some 10,000 cars a day pass that site. It, too, is a scenic corridor for our community. Next week's Planning Commission will touch on discussions about that site, but really there's been no presentation to the community for what the future of our urban core will look like. Now, you are required to restore it to ESHA, but not until you use it intensely for construction, staging, materials, and construction traffic will take place there. That secret has not been told to my community. I learned it because I read the documents that I don't think even you do. I would appreciate a full vetting of the staging areas and their impacts, and specific notification certainly to the property owners that surround the site, but even a public press release so that the rest of the community could pay attention. And I think had they known without the larger issue of the wastewater projects coming, I think they would have raised objections to the intense uses at these two very visible sites.
Thank you, Julie. Ms. Owen?
Good morning. Lindy Owen from the Los Osos Prohibition Zone. I wanted to speak on A11, though I wrote A12 accidentally. I am just sick of watching more and more and more money be grabbed and asked for this project. This was, as we recall, maybe Mr. Gibson can remind you how it was shovel ready. This project is just a big place to earn more money for the county and maybe keep the county afloat. I don't know, but it's on our backs, and the bills are coming due this December. We pay our first payment on this endlessly long undesigned sewer that we thought was designed. I mean, the people in Los Osos have absolutely no idea what is going on, and they thought that it was designed and that we would be starting soon. But, of course, we are not, because it's not designed. It's being reviewed again for the 50th time. In case you don't remember, $40 million has been spent on this project. $100,000 now for Corollo for a new contract. That's just cut and paste and more playing around with additional needs of funding on a project that is probably going to collapse because I think the federal investigations are going to stop it. You can't put this project in with an earthquake zone, just like Diablo cannot relicense in an earthquake zone like it is. When does it stop? When does somebody investigate it? When does somebody say another 100,000 is enough? Mr. Meacham has mentioned how he's sick of watching it, but obviously this will go on for years. How many more million are you adding to this project that is a bad project, it's flawed, and I'm sick of watching people like Corollo. It's the feeder fish, the bottom fish. I'm very tired of watching them get more contracts from this project. Thank you.
That will close it to public comment on consent, and I'll bring it back to my colleagues to see if they have some questions or comments. And Mr. Meacham. Thank you. Mr. Gibson?
A1 and A11, please.
Okay. Mr. Teixeira? And Mr. Patterson?
None, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On A1, I've been advised we need just a slight amount of specificity added to our action there. If we look on page 3 of A1, sort of in the middle there, these are appointments to the Children and Families Commission, which popularly known as the First Five Commission, and it's going to be for those appointments of the five members who were very thankful are willing to serve, mm-hmm. will be for a period of 4 years ending on July 20th, 2015 was the specific date that we wanted to add to that. And then on A11, I would only comment that this item has been understood to be coming from and is within the budget for the project. I see Mr. Diodati in the audience and wonder if he might give us a 30-second summary of what this particular contract amendment, if you're prepared. I know we don't have Mr. Waddell. We have Mr. D'Anzo. Actually, Mr. D'Anzo will give us the quick rundown on what this item is in case there's any questions.
Yes, good morning, Board. I'm Ray D'Anzo. I'm filling in for John Waddell at the moment. And in a nutshell, the reason for this particular water recycle planning grant is in order to be eligible for that $5 million funding grant for recycled water, the State Water Board has directed us to complete a facilities planning grant or planning study application. And with that application, we needed to prepare this report, which is essentially a facilities plan detailing all the elements of the recycled water program and the different facilities involved with generating recycled water. And so the good news about this planning grant is we are going to get a 50% matching funding for it. So even though it is a touch over $100,000, we're going to get roughly $50,000 as a grant to help us complete the study.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't know if colleagues had any specific questions. If you don't, I would only respond to one that was raised, which was the question of whether the county has been repaid. The $8.2 million has been returned. It was in the last fiscal year. And the balance of the interim funding, how its uses have been detailed in a budget that was passed when we approved the budget. So I don't know if Mr. Patterson has his light on. I'm prepared to make a motion on consent, which would be to approve consent as amended.
A second.
Okay. Motion to approve by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Patterson. If there's no further comments or questions, a roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes, thank you. Okay, appreciate that for those of you here for consent, and we will move on to public comment. And in public comment, we have quite a few, so we'll start with Dr. Height, and we'll followed by Dane Sensor.
Dr. C. Hyde, Los Osos. My mother is retired from the district attorney's office in Butte County, where her district attorney was reelected on the platform that no one is beneath the law. Think of it. No citizen beneath the law. What hope for a community. 2004-2005 was a challenging year for your grand jury. The Housing Authority of the City of San Luis Obispo, Animal Services, and Sheriff's Complaint Process. 6 years later, chipped paint, fences in disrepair, beggars can't be choosers. 6 years later, there really was a problem in Animal Services. And it has taken 6 years, but I want to commend your new sheriff for implementing a complaint process that includes internal affairs. What hope for a community, no one beneath or above the law. We have seen many examples now of county scandals, and those who are well-connected seem to be above the law. Above the law in prosecution, above the law in sentencing. I advocate for equity. I advocate for remedy. It is up to the county board to lead by example. It is up to the county board to have fair processes, adequate remedy, and equity in all things. No one beneath or above the law. What hope for a community. Now, for the record, I've always been saddened when people's behaviors and addictions get out of control, when people have problems with their kids. It's sad, but it is very human. It's actually really pretty typical. I don't really care who's having sex with who, if they're consenting adults, but because we need to separate faith-based morality from the business of the state, that is the law. But I think that the word that the public is searching for through some of these scandals is influence peddling and abuse of power. And these are very real concerns, and it is the responsibility of the board to address appearances of inequity. And it is the responsibility of the board to refrain from putting down the public who raises concerns of influence peddling and abuse of power. And I have concerns about how things work is playing out in an editorial in the Bay News, and where someone basically is coming out and saying, we're connected, ha-ha, you're not, ha-ha. And you know, I don't know if they're going to print my editorial, but I had to respond to it, because everyone deserves dignity and fair treatment. Being connected somehow to some public organization shouldn't matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sensor, followed by Lizette Mizell.
Dane Sensor. First of all, I want to express my apology to this board. Last week I probably spoke a little more harshly than I'd normally do. Of course, you get passionate sometimes, so I do apologize to each and every one of the board, especially Mr. Hill. We had a nice chance to see each other at Mr. Parkinson's, the sheriff's, one of his town hall events, which we were very cordial. We shook hands, and I think we generally meant it, and I think we're both trying to achieve the same thing. And I never want to be targeted for a hit piece by Bob Cuddy in a Tribune for using this public comment and a public opinion like he did to Mrs. Owen. I wanted to bring that up. My issue today, though, is about the military. It's particularly about San Luis Bay Motors and Kevin Penson, the owner. The shameful and disgraceful profiteering of somebody, the military name, and I'm going to give a specific answer. I worked there. I was a salesman there. This is Dan Rieger. He was a veteran of the year. I happened to be the fortunate person to meet Dan the day after he came home from Iraq on two tours of duty. What happened after that was I sold him a truck over there, which was, I was so excited about him. The owner, we're going to give it to you, cost. We're going to, using the military to profiteer is, to me, is just the most shameful thing I could ever imagine. After I received my commission check, I was very excited at first. Afterwards, I was so guilt-ridden that I eventually left there, because here is a man who's using the military. He has a shrine in his office in the name of people who have given their life, people have given, fought in wars, to profiteer off the military saying how for you, you're going to give them a good deal, to me is just shameful. I've been involved with the military and trying to do things. I'm going to return every cent of my commission. His young wife, who's been working so hard for years, Shelley, to give to the soldiers. I met Shelley years ago. I was so excited about this. But I'll tell you, this public comment here, I don't know if people really realize it, but these men and women have given their life so I can talk for here for 3 minutes, okay? And they fought for this country so I can have my 3 minutes, so I can talk to the politicians with them listening to me without saying anything. That's a nice thing sometimes, where they're not talking and I am. And Nicky Gordon and his wife came in to buy an automobile. Here's a soldier who was out 3 days from his Humvee being blown up, his two friends killed, the driver and a gunner. Never should this public comment or anybody in the public use the military as a way to profiteer off their company. It's shameful. I hope that the military people will never, ever go there and buy a car from Kevin Penson at San Luis Bay Motors.
Thank you, Mr. Censor. Ms. Mazzell, followed by Eric Greening. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lizette Mazzell. I am a comedian. I'm also, so a little lighter note, I also am a producer of an event called The Big Laugh. It is held on quarterly scheduled events at the Atascadero Lake Pavilion. And I just wanted to share some information about my next event, which is a Stand Up to Cancer event. All the comedians are cancer survivors. And in fact, appearing at the event will be Suzanne Wong. She has been for 10 years the HGTV's House Hunters host. She is currently battling breast cancer right now, but in her words, she's saying that she's journeying back to health. And of course, she plans to outlive the oncologist that said she wouldn't make it. So this is very encouraging to have her. I have a very courageous Steve Mazan. He is an Academy Award nominated for Best Documentary, Dying to Do Letterman. This event I've been doing, it's been a grassroots event for about the past 4 years. I'm very fortunate to be able to share my passion with the community. We participate in the Relay for Life, and I had a wonderful article just done in the Atascadero News about the event, so if you'd like to take a look at that. I also wanted the South County to know that there's a very viable entertainment resource happening in the North County. A lot of people, you know, it's hard to find an opportunity for entertainment with the exception of the Mid-State Fair. So I've been able to bring this out to the Central Coast, and I'm very grateful and very thankful. So I invite you and the community and the listeners to come out and enjoy a great night out on August 6th at the Atascadero Lake Pavilion. Thank you so much.
Ms. Mazzell, is there a website that people might go to for more information?
Of course. It's thebiglaugh.net. And I also have some flyers I can share, so I'll bring those up. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Greening, who I see just broke our chair, and we'll be sending you the bill. You better pass around a hat, Eric. That's very expensive stuff we're talking about. Followed by Jeff Edwards.
Investment of building seems to be reaching some point in its design lifetime. Anything made by humans does, including nuclear power plants. But anyway, picking up from the previous speaker, humor and the arts are obviously critically important in keeping our sanity and dealing with heavy issues like cancer. And on that note, prevention is as important as dealing with it once it arises. A website I recommend you visit regularly is that of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, NIRS. Not only do they cover domestic issues very well, they are giving a riveting series of updates on Fukushima. And I am going to ask again that we need to have a review, not just of an evacuation plan, as if we're going to have a disaster that resolves quickly. not just a review of tabletop exercises for disasters that are resolved within 24, 48, or 72 hours, but that we have an actual planning session based on what if we have a protracted disaster. The July 19th update of the NERS relative to Fukushima talks about the 578 contaminated steers that were sold for meat and mostly presumably consumed. They talk serious contamination with cesium-137. It talks about how land contamination continues to either spread or be discovered. The continued presence of iodine-131 indicates continuing releases given its 8-day half-life. It indicates that the radiation is depositing or being found at greater and greater distance, that there are hot spots, just as at Chernobyl, where villages hundreds of miles from the accident no longer exist because of hot spots. The Japanese government instead increased the allowable radiation exposure limit for the general population 20-fold. Now, stop and think about some of these impacts. Contaminated agricultural products, people choosing not to visit a place that has a name for contamination. That's the two greatest supports for our economy. We can have reality contamination and we can have perception contamination. We are wide open to both, but the starting point has to be a recognition. An evacuation plan can't be based on shelter in place for a quick disaster. That's what we have now. If a disaster doesn't politely develop over a 12 to 15 hour period, we'll be asked to shelter in place. For how long? This is months. This is years. There is still contamination emitted and spreading. We have to rethink from the very beginning, from the get-go. Please schedule a hearing to discuss this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Edwards, followed by Julie Tacker.
Thank you, Mr. Hill, Board. Hello, Jeff Edwards. As a follow-up to your meeting of last Tuesday afternoon, I wanted to mention that I've written an article that's been posted on CalCoast News. You might want to take a read of that. The discussion that was held last Tuesday, as I think I mentioned, was cursory at best. There's a 2004 drainage study that's been prepared for Oceano, and the primary recommendations in that report have been completely overlooked by your Public Works Department. It implicates the airport in a solution. And it appears that there's been just a complete shift now to a pumps and pipeline program. And even more lower tech strategies of berming and using K-rail. It's a bit bizarre. One thing's for sure, that the consultants will be paid, public works staff will be paid, win, lose, or draw. And the unfortunate part is that the residents will pay ultimately for any solution that's put on the ground. And unfortunately, it needs to be a permanent solution, a long-term solution. So, again, please read the posting on CalCoast News. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Ms. Tacker, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning again. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos. I wanted to focus these comments on the ongoing investigation of the relationship between Public Works Director Paavo Ogren and former Los Osos Community Services District Director Maria Kelly. Mr. Grant is conducting that investigation from what I read in the papers and watch on television, your board meetings. And I did read an email where he spoke to a member of the public, and he said that the focus of the investigation was very narrow in that it was only in relationship to a possible conflict maybe over the wastewater project. I respect Mr. Grant. What I would ask is that an outside investigator be hired. I believe an unbiased opinion needs to be an objective opinion needs to be taken, and the investigation needs to be broadened. Ms. Kelly and Mr. Ogren both had influence over the ongoing litigation with the seawater intrusion and groundwater management of the Los Osos Basin, the ongoing discussions relative to the district's bankruptcy, and some recommendations. Ms. Kelly was on the Water Resources Advisory Committee that made recommendations to your board. She made recommendations to that board. I think it's much more convoluted than simply just the wastewater project. I think it's very, very delicate. The public has levied a series of public records requests, and the bits of information that are coming out, I'm sure Mr. Grant has seen, corroborate the concerns of the constituents, and that Ms. Kelly and Mr. Ogren were in touch via telephone before and after meetings where votes were taken, that even, and I don't know how this even happened, but Ms. Kelly made travel arrangements for Mr. Ogren to go to Washington. These are serious concerns, and the implications may in fact ripple into the wastewater project and the funding that you so sought. So I would ask that there is an appearance of impropriety. Mr. Ogren needs to be put on administrative leave, and a full investigation needs to take place. The people's money is what we're talking about here. The people's money is at stake. Thank you.
Ms. Taylor, followed by Ben DeFatta.
Good morning. I would like to give credit where credit is due, and that being Mr. McNulty and his requesting that ex parte be divulged on several different things that have been discussed in this chamber. I would also like to ask if there should be ex parte on more items on the agenda that are now being discussed. It is something that has been used in, shall we call it, a great number of situations and instances, and I would compliment him again and request that when ex parte is a part of a discussion that all those who have had it divulge it. That having been said, redistricting is a problem that is something that we in the, shall we call it, communities are, some are aware, some are not. But redistricting in 1980 was a very terrible situation in this county. Terrible because it broke up a lot of communities and concerns. There was a very, shall we call it, serious commission that was developed at that time by the board in which they, the commission, came up with a decision to split Los Osos in two, to split Atascadero into three separate supervisorial districts. Not only that, but the fifth district was to encompass the all or total of San Luis Obispo. And last but not least, I would say that the worst thing that was developed was a fifth district was to have, I'm sorry, the third district was to have a covering of 1 million acres, and that is District 4. It appears as if there is a question in this board's mind as to redistricting now. I would heartily discuss the fact of any kind of discussion of splitting a community. That, whether it be large or small, is not a good process. It is not a good type of representation for a community. People have no idea what is going on in a district unless they have a representative who is supposedly concentrating on that one district. And for this board to sit up here and say that they represent all of San Luis Obispo County is disingenuous. I've seen it before. I don't want to see it again, and I surely don't want to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Mr. DeFatta, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, Board, Sheriffs, and DeFatta from bankrupt village of Los Osos. How much bad luck can Los Osos have? As long as Pavel Ogren has been involved in our sewer project, it was expensive and unaffordable from the start. His close ties to engineers and contractors should have been enough to tell you of his conflict of interest with these firms, and he should not have been allowed to continue to run this project. Since the days of cheaper, better, faster, when Pandora's group was active, the county's gravity sewer project was $72 million, so the people protested and started their own CSD. Pandora's group had a ponding system right in the middle of town for $32 million. This was shot down by this county's good old boys club and Roger Briggs of the Regional Water Quality Board and Pavel Ogren. Then under the old CSD plan, it went from $32 million to $45 million, then to $60 million, then $95 million, and morphed into a expensive gravity system. Then Pandora's group changed sides for some reason. Then the new Los Osos general manager, Bruce Buell, Pavo, and the county's urging, urged, backdated a contract with the contractors to start up right away. Ogren's flawed gravity project 1 month before a recall election. The election results were in, and those three directors were thrown out in disgrace. Then there was pressure to bankrupt the CSD. Talk about sewer losers. Bad luck again for Los Osos. Pavo again. In that 1 month before the election, digging started up, but the new cost was $145 million. It boggles the mind, doesn't it? The three new directors called in the Ripley Pacific Company, who invited several sewer specialists and included was Dr. D, a world-renowned expert. Within 6 months, they had done most of their studies with a step-stag project around $95 million. Liquefaction was they were way ahead of their time because liquefaction was a determining factor. We are in the Pacific Rim seismic zone, something Mr. Gibson doesn't want to have this new redesign group study as we speak. Gibson and Pavo again. Despite Ogren's and Gibson's many costly mistakes, they are still running this project, wasting the public's money, and because of you five, he is still running this unaffordable gravity project. What the heck is going on with you guys? I'll give you my last 3 seconds. Think about it.
Ms. Owen, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning again, Lindy, from the County Abuse Zone in Los Osos. I want to follow up again with Mr. Grant's investigation into the connection between Pava Ogren, your County Public Works Director, and Maria Kelly, who had to step down after misrepresenting her home location for 6 months. The problem with all of this is that there are many things that would not have occurred had Maria Kelly not been a CSD director, had she not been put in the technical advisory committee, and had she not sat in on very important meetings which are determining the destiny of giving away our waste franchise agreement. There is no way that a bankruptcy would give away its second only income maker unless something was awry. I want to go back, and I've been doing public records requests at the CSD in Los Osos trying to find out how Dan Gilmore was hired. Well, surprise, surprise, surprise. There was no ad for the position of general manager ever posted anywhere. There were no other applicants ever that applied. There was no process of interviewing any applicants that supposedly applied. There, Mr. Gilmore has no application that he supplied, and he has no resume that was turned in. There was absolutely no process to look for a new replacement general manager when Dan Gilmore was hired. And let me remind you, Dan Gilmore personally told me that he is close friends with Pava Ogren. He's been affiliated with him on the Nacimiento project, on many other projects. Well, now acting as a general manager for 1.5 years now, we have seen the possibility of the continuance of RCSD rapidly start fading. Now, I see this as a general plan to, we have saltwater intrusion. Why would it be ignored to the extent that it's been ignored with an ISJ, the interlocutory stipulation judgment agreements between the two major water purveyors and the county? Why would this have dragged on for 7 years when we have a 12 times acceleration problem? We are losing that basin as these people sit and have these meetings, endless meetings. The reason is that Nacimiento is 1/2 of it is unsold. I don't know if you are aware of that. 50% of that project, the water is not being paid for by anyone. In other words, the county is absorbing the building cost of that project. Well, I know who's supposed to be getting that water, and it's because of people like Maria Kelly coordinating with people like Pava Ogren, coordinating with other people like Dan Gilmore, coordinating with a CSD who could easily give up their water company and end up having to have Golden State take over. Golden State has the money to import Nacimiento. Voila! Pavo's problem is solved on our backs again. He needs to step down. You need a serious investigation. Thank you.
Mr. Margetson?
Richard Margetson. How many times after a Los Osos agenda item or update, when it comes back to the board, do we hear Mr. Gibson say, we've heard these questions before, they've been asked and answered, I'm not going to go into that, blah, blah, blah. The last agenda item, A11, is a perfect example of why people continue to come to these meetings about Los Osos. Number of questions were asked, and they weren't answered. Is it because you didn't have the answer, or the answer might not be what you want to put out at this point? So I'm going to ask again, with relation to the wastewater project, how many potential customers for recycled water has the county been in contact with and have commitments for taking that water? This is a huge component of this project. You can shine us on as much as you want when you don't want us to have the information, but you wonder why we're here every week. That's part of the reason. And somewhere down the road, gentlemen, when all of this plays out, it's not just going to be us in the room. It's going to be other people in Los Osos, people that call us and ask questions. As an example, right now, yesterday, I was told by a friend that she was talking to a real estate agent in Los Osos who lives in Los Osos, who's lived in Los Osos for over 27 years. She asked her the question, when will the assessments hit the tax rolls? A real estate agent working in Los Osos who lives in Los Osos didn't know the answer to that question. Didn't know that they're coming in December. So how many of the people that go to work each day, people that have children, people that schedules are busy, aren't reading the things that are coming in the mail whenever they do come with regard to Los Osos, don't get a chance to read the paper, the little updates, don't get a chance to watch these meetings or the Los Osos update. How many of those people do you think have no clue what's coming down the road? You say you represent the entire county. Mr. Meacham, you said when you became supervisor, you went and spent 5 hours in each district driving around. Did you see the infrastructure of Los Osos? Did you see the number of rundown homes that are going to be adversely impacted with an additional $200 a month cost, which will then not allow them to fix their roof, have the repainting job done on the outside, have their driveway fixed? It's going to come back, gentlemen. There's not enough updates. There's not enough information being provided to Los Osos right now. Thank you.
Okay, that will close it to public comment. And before we move into our hearings, I understand that our sheriff is celebrating his birthday today. I believe it's his, is it, Mr. Basti told me it was his 67th year. But I don't take that to be true. I think perhaps the undersheriff was just having some fun. I believe it is his 47th, which still makes him considerably older than I. But we do, of course, I think all of us wish you a very happy birthday. I'm sure that you will have a nice time tonight with your lovely family. So we shall move on. Madam Clerk, our first hearing item, if you could introduce it, please.
Certainly. That would be item D1, consideration of a resolution to amend 6 existing road fee area resolutions allowing building permit applicants to enter into road improvement fee deferral agreements with the county. 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th districts. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay, I see Mr. Flynn and Mr. Giffen. It's an all-star team up here. Who goes first?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Honorable Board. Dave Flynn with Public Works Department. The first item up is involving the road impact fees, and I'd like to introduce Mark Davis from our Development Services Division, who has a brief presentation to review the matter.
Chairman Hill, members of the board, good morning. Mark Davis, again, Development Services, Public Works. Today's hearing item is a follow-up to the April 5th, 2011 hearing, whereby this board directed staff to proceed with the limited-term fee deferral program, specifically for public facility and road improvement fees. Before we discuss program components, I'd like to just briefly review road improvement fees for the benefit of the public. Currently, there are 6 road improvement fee areas where projects are subject to fees, and these areas include Los Osos, North Coast, San Luis Bay, San Miguel, South County, and Templeton. Also referenced in the slide are projects which currently have road improvement fee agreements with the county, however, will not be eligible to participate in the deferral program. Some background, per the current ordinance, Title 1301 allows for the collection of road improvement fees either prior to issuance of any building permit or prior to any issuance of any certificate of occupancy. And per policy, the resolutions for each of the 6, I'm losing a slide here, it looks like. I guess we're missing that. The resolution for each of the 6 road improvement fee areas require the road improvement fee to be paid prior to the issuance of any building permit. Since April 5th, 2011, Public Works, Planning, and Building County Council have worked closely to define a program that would be acceptable to your board by incorporating program components as requested, and those include only County of San Luis Obispo public facility fees and road improvement fees would be eligible for deferral under the program terms and conditions. A 20% deposit is proposed to be collected from program applicants based on percentages of the deferred amount and due prior to fee deferral. A minimum 3-year sunset clause shall be implemented on program, after which road improvement fees will revert back to being collected prior to building permit issuance, and approval of this resolution would establish that as September 30th, 2014, as the ending date. The agreement shall constitute a lien and be recorded with the county clerk, which will be released upon payment of the deferred fees. The agreement shall have a subordination clause, which states the county's claim for deferred fee payment will take priority over any other claims formed and other existing or future agreements, and staff shall monitor the program's administrative costs to determine whether implementing a future compensation fee would be necessary. Again, the road improvement fee deferral is optional to only those projects within one of those 6 areas, improvement areas, as previously shown, and that no option to defer road improvement fees is not available to those subdivisions having an existing road fee agreement. Entering into the agreement to defer road improvement fees does not vest the fee at the time of building permit issuance. Rather, the total amount owed at the time of payment of deferred fees may increase or decrease based on the fee amounts and the effect at the time of payment. And to be eligible, the applicant must have an approved project, and all conditions of approval at the time of permit issuance shall be met, and the applicant shall have no unpaid balances due for the project or any other projects, and all the payments of taxes and assessments on the property shall be current. And lastly, Program applicants shall submit a completed fee deferral application together with current preliminary title report, a copy of the permit application and plans, and organizational documents. With that said, we recommend the board to adopt the attached resolution, which allows for the deferral of road improvement fees, allows the Director of Public Works to enter the deferral agreement acceptable to council, and establishes deferral program component as just discussed. Staff is available for questions, including representatives from both planning and building.
Okay, great. I see no board questions at this time. We have discussed this, so I'll open it up to the public. I have one request to speak. Mr. Margetson, are you seeking to, if you would pass that on? Jeff Edwards, followed by Richard Margetson.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Board members, Jeff Edwards. As your board knows, impact and development fees are a significant part of costs associated with producing new housing and commercial development. I wanted to make a suggestion and by way of request, ask that a future item be brought back that would consider incentives for strategic growth projects. And I think there's a real basis for reduced road fees for smart growth projects that would be based on reduced impacts. To incentivize projects to be developed, I think this is going to be important. So, again, I think that these fees should be considered in the future for some kind of modification based on smart growth projects. And I'd like to also extend these comments to the next agenda item, which talks about the public facility fees. So, again, any type of fee, I think there are potentially real reductions in the impacts, and so there should be a reduction in the applicable fees. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Margetson?
Richard Margetson, I actually thought there was possibly going to be some discussion with the board before it came to the public, but I'm going to give you something a little bit outside the box. I was involved in a discussion on how to, in the future, promote the establishment of more mobile home parks in this county and how to incentivize the process to get developers to maybe go that direction. And some ideas that came up in those discussions were of deferring the fees until the properties, the individual units, you know, after the park was developed and new modular homes or manufactured homes were put on site, deferring the payment of the fees until each individual property was sold. And I'm wondering if that at some point, it sounds like this is a slam dunk and you're going to approve this today, but at some point down the road, if that could be part of the discussion. Because for developers, the majority of costs are up front, other than their building costs, but the road improvement fees, the facility fees, the permit fees are all up front. And the actual impact, as an example, for the road impact fees is after people are living in the homes. The next 40, 50 years of traffic. It's not right at the moment that they go in to ask for the building permit. It's somewhere down the road that the majority of the impact takes place. So in the same process about putting a lien on the property and having it paid through escrow at the close out of the seller's proceeds, that may help the developer. It may encourage developers to come up with projects. It may encourage developers to come up with projects for more affordable housing. Smaller units, we're looking to help, you know, the homeless situation. We don't have enough apartment complexes in the county. We don't have enough mobile home parks. We know there's a need for all these things. If there was a way on the front end to defer them even further down the road by the use of a lien on the property that's paid on each individual one, I don't think the process would be that tough to put in place. We have liens that have to be cleared when a property is sold now through escrow. This could be added to that list. I wish it would become part of the discussion or at least somewhere down the road. Thank you.
Thank you. And that will close it to public comment. Bring it back to the board for any questions. Of course, this is a resolution that had come from our April 5th discussion where we agreed as a board that we wanted to do what we could to defer fees to help stimulate some of our local business, including in the building industry. And that's what these two items are in response to. So, Supervisor Meacham.
There's no other discussion. I'll make a motion that we approve staff's recommendation.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Patterson. If there's no other questions, Madam Clerk, a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Thank you. And the next item, could you please introduce it, Madam Clerk?
Certainly. Your next item is C1, a hearing to consider a resolution to amend the public facility financing plan and the public facilities fee ordinance Title 18 of the county code to provide for the deferral of public facilities fees until final building inspection. All districts. This item was introduced July 12, 2011. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay. Mr. Giffen.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, supervisors. The next item is a companion document related to public facilities. The presentation this morning is going to be given by John Hofshore.
Okay. John?
Thank you. I'm John Hofshore, Department of Planning and Building. I'm going to just go through a couple slides here. Some of this duplicates what Public Works has reported to you, but we'll go through it pretty quick. The public facilities plan has three basic parts. There's the financing plan, which we're proposing to amend today. The ordinance, which is Title 18, that is being proposed to be amended today. And, of course, the administrative guidelines. Currently, we collect public facility fees when permits are issued. And in the yellow there, you can see that we're deferring that one step further, where fees would be finally paid at the time that the permit is finaled and occupancy is issued. There was, on I believe it was April 4th, we discussed this in some detail, and I'm just going to review some of the pros and cons that your board had and that staff had. In terms of pros, we felt that it reduced costs to builders, at least that's what the builders were reporting to us, that it would stimulate applications for development that maybe people were waiting on, and that would be good things. And then, of course, ultimately, we would increase the county property tax base and create jobs. Cons that we've heard, some of the major ones were a lag in fee collection may affect projects that some of our recipients are receiving. And as you know, we collect fees for general government, law enforcement, fire protection, and so forth. The delay in funding may affect improvements and projects ongoing. And then number three and four there on the slide, added administrative costs, obviously, because the tracking requirements. And then in the end, just assuring that these fees will, in fact, be paid. Some of the basic components of fee deferral, 20% plus an administrative fee is required. And then your board spent some time discussing at your last meeting that we wanted some assurances, such as a recorded agreement, that there be no active violations that aren't being corrected. Taxes are current, and then the obvious things such as proof of ownership of the property. Within that, staff monitoring is part of this program. As you know, we come to you approximately every spring with the annual public facility fee report, and at that time we would be showing you the amounts paid, any unpaid balances, and so forth. So we would be adding this. I also feel that we will probably be doing some monitoring in the meantime to try to identify to see if there's any issues that were unanticipated, either for or against the notion of deferral. And last key part of this is, as you asked, this ordinance will expire in 36 months, and unless it's renewed, and that would have to be renewed in a public hearing just like we have today. So in conclusion, our recommendation is that the board approve the ordinance and direct the chairman to sign, and there's two parts. One is the resolution amending the public facilities financing plan. Second is amendments to the ordinance. And that concludes my remarks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hofschauer. I have a question here from Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you. John, in regard to the justification for administrative fees for this, I'm having a little difficult time determining some of these things that we already do anyway, don't we? I mean, consultation, application review, and notification to the applicant, those are all part of the process, I would assume. Why would we add this fee on top of that?
Most of those steps are brand new. Obviously, we don't record agreements when somebody pays the fees. It's basically a single step final fee payment when you walk out the door with an issued building permit. We are now adding those, I believe it's six or eight steps to that. I envision at least a month before somebody's ready to get an issued permit, they need to be talking to us about the pros and cons, whether this is good for them, whether it's not. They need to be getting estimates. If road improvement fees apply, if public facility fees apply. And then, of course, we have to go through the process of recording this agreement and then, of course, monitoring it. In the middle of that is the applicant must bring us an accurate current preliminary title report so that we can tell which signatures need to be on this agreement. And one thing that became clear to us is that the payment of fees is something the customer expects to pretty much happen on the spot. So that means we have to pull somebody out of doing another task, and they have to stop and process this and maybe walk it over to the recorder's office and so forth. So it's we see some steps in there, and we feel that, of course, in our department, we're expected to get full reimbursement for our costs.
Okay, I guess I just don't see that we are so heavily impacted right now with projects that it would require an additional procedural steps to do this. So I guess I'm a little bit concerned that we're adding a fee that I really can't see justification for.
And am I reading this correct, Mr. Hofschauer, that we are going to look to see if this fee needs to be refined based on its use?
Absolutely.
Meaning it could, in fact.
Well, I'm hoping that we'll have enough track record between now and next March when we're writing the staff report that we'll be able to say this, you know, basically report on the time and motion.
Okay. Other questions for staff at this time? I will open it up to the public, and I have no requests from the public to speak, so I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board. Further comments or questions on this item?
I'll move staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
Okay, moved by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Patterson. There's no further comments. Madam Clerk, please roll call.
I'm sorry, the motion also includes waiving the reading of the ordinance?
It does, I believe.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson. Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yeah.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes. Thank you, staff, for getting back to us with these deferrals right as fast as you could. It was very helpful, and I think hopefully it'll have a good effect and stimulate some activity in our building industry. Madam Clerk, if you would introduce the next item, please.
Certainly. That would be item E1, an update on Assembly Bills 109, 117. Of the 2011 Public Safety Realignment Implementation. Recommend the item be received and filed.
Okay, let me go over to Mr. Grant first.
Thank you very much. Jim Grant, County Administrator. I'm joined today by Chief Probation Officer Jim Salio, and we would like to give the board and the public a briefing on what's called Public Safety Realignment. It was all part of the state budget that, in fact, transfers some of the public safety programs that the state is responsible for over to the counties. It's really two main parts of that. The first one is that some nonviolent, non-serious, non-sex offenders will no longer be sent to state prison but would be placed in local custody. The second part is that some offenders being released from state prisons will now be supervised by our probation department. So in order to get all of these changes in place, counties have established a Community Corrections Partnership Committee. That includes almost all of the public safety partners that we have, along with the health and behavioral health folks in the county, to take a look and write up a plan that has to come to your board in September. All of these changes take place in October of this year. By way of the state budget, these program changes are paid for by the state, but with one caveat is that it's not a constitutional amendment, so there's no guarantee from year to year whether or not the funding is going to be there, which is problematic for someone like myself, who's your county administrator and has to put together the budget every year. There's just no guarantee. I wish there had been a constitutional guarantee, but there isn't. So we've been allocated over $2 million for this. And we're putting together the plan as we speak. So with that, that's the high-level discussion. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Salio for the details of the Public Safety Realignment Program. Thank you.
Chief Salio.
Thank you, members of the board. Jim Salio, Chief Probation Officer. I'm here to update you today on AB 109 and the companion bill, AB 117.
We'll get you some technical assistance as Mr. Oquist is jumping to the rescue. There we go.
Brilliant.
AB 109 and AB 117. AB 109 was signed by the governor back in April. AB 117, which essentially amends part of AB 109, was signed in June 30th at the adoption of the state budget.
Jeff, you have to roll it.
Okay. So what does the bill contain? Essentially, there's four main functions that the bill puts forth. That's the transfer of local custody for non-serious, non-violent, non-sex offenders, we refer to them as the nons, to local custody unless there's a certain number of excluded crimes that would fit that description, but by statute have been excluded from local custody. It also changes people coming out of state prison to be supervised locally. They're no longer called parolees, but they'll be post-release community supervision, and this population is to be supervised by the local counties. And then there's changes to the state parole revocation process in that they will no longer be sent back to prison for violations of parole. And then the last piece, it establishes an executive committee of the Community Corrections Partnership, which was established under Senate Bill 678. So some of the key points, as I mentioned, AB 117 modified AB 109. AB 117 set the realignment operative date as October 1st, 2011. All changes set forth by AB 109 and AB 117 are prospective from October 1st, 2011 on. And then again, the realignment allocations to the counties are to cover the cost of housing the nons, to cover the supervision of the post-release community supervision, to cover the cost of housing parole violators in county jail, and to provide for treatment services for the entire population. So who still goes to state prison? The following may be sentenced to state prison if they have a prior or current serious violent offense as described by the penal code. They're required to register as a sex offender. And again, if they're convicted of one of the crimes that are listed on the exclusion list, again, this population can be sentenced to state prison. So who gets sentenced locally? The AB 109 basically redefined the definition of a felony to allow for time to be spent in county jail for more than 1 year. Again, it's the nonviolent offenders, the non-serious offenders, and the non-sex offenders, absent the excluded 60-plus crimes. And what are the sentencing options for the nons? There's felony probation, which is currently the case right now. They can be sentenced to a certain amount of time and early into jail with an early release into an alternative custody situation. They could have a split sentence, and this is a new law that came under AB 117, where they would be sentenced to a certain amount of time in the local jail, and then placed on mandatory probation. Right now, probation is not mandatory. It's actually optional. This would create a mandatory probation. Or they can be sentenced to jail to do all their time in jail in lieu of prison. Everything but the felony probation counts as a prior prison sentence for the offender. And the split sentence cannot be longer than the original sentence when you combine the time in custody and the time on probation. Jail incarceration options would include the sheriff has been given some alternative custody tools that the sheriff can use. There's the home detention for low-level offenders, and local jail custody credits will be changed now to match prison credit commitments, which are day for day. Some other options are the county can contract back with the state for beds at the prisons. Their state has not set a cost on this yet, but the indication that this will be by far the most expensive option. The county may contract with other counties, other county jails that may have bed space. You can work a contract with them. You could also contract with public community correctional facilities. These are essentially private prisons in the state. You may not contract back with the state for parole revocations. Parole revocations cannot go back to the state even under contract. And this is obviously a very important factor, that no state prisoners will be transferred to county jails. They will not move any of the current state prisoners to our local county jails. So the next population that is dealt with under the realignment is the post-release community supervision. Offenders released on post-community supervision will be on supervision for a maximum of 3 years. They will discharge after 3 years by operation of law. It does include for graduated sanctions, which include flash incarceration, which means they can be incarcerated up to 14 days within their period of release supervision. This does not require them to go back to court for a hearing. They can be brought back before the court for adjudication of violations, and new conditions of release can be imposed at the local level. Also, too, there are no supervision requirements or caseload ratios. This can be set by the local counties. Revocations on parole, on violations, rather, is capped at 180 days, and again, jail only, no return to prison. They may be discharged after 6 months without a violation. And the post-release community supervision, again, released from prison are the nonviolent offenders, non-sex offenders, non-serious offenders. It does include offenders, though, who may have had serious violent offenses in their past criminal history, because the designation for post-release community supervision is based upon the committing offense. So who is not on, who will parole keep, who will not be on post-release community supervision? This will include the three strikers, individuals with current serious violent commitment offenses. These are offenses that they were sentenced to prison on, high-risk sex offenders, as defined by CDCR. This would be in relation to CDCR's sex offender risk assessment tool, mentally disordered offenders, and then anybody that's currently on parole before October 1st, 2011, will remain with parole throughout their term of parole. So the post-release community supervision discharge process, as I mentioned, they're discharged by operation of law after 3 years. They may be discharged if they have no violations for consecutive 6 months. They must be discharged if they have no violations for a continuous 1 year. And the courts will not be involved in the discharge process of either post-release community supervision or parolees. So the other thing that the realignment does change is parole violations. The Board of Parole Hearings will retain authority over parolees until July 1st, 2013. That was something that was changed in AB 117. Violations will be served in jail starting October 1st, 2011. Again, they will not be returned back to prison for violations. They will have the same sanctions available to them as the post-release community supervision, which is in the flash incarceration in jail up to 14 days. They will have the same revocation cap. They cannot do more than 180 days in the local jail. Only persons who can be sent back to prison is somebody who had a life term with parole and was paroled. They're the only ones who can be revoked and sent back to prison for a violation. And after July 1st, 2013, the parole revocation process will mirror the post-release community supervision process, which means that it'll be handled at the local level and not by the Board of Parole Hearings. And the final thing that realignment established was an executive committee of the existing community correction partnership. The executive committee is chaired by the chief probation officer, includes the sheriff, a chief of police, the district attorney, the public defender, a judge or his or her designee, and then the board must appoint one of the following, somebody representing Department of Social Services, our mental health, our county drug or county drug and alcohol services. The role of the Community Correction Partnership will be to develop the realignment plan. As Mr. Grant mentioned, they are currently working on that plan right now. The Executive Committee is the voting body of the CCP, and they will actually vote on the plan to be presented to the Board of Supervisors, and the plan is deemed accepted by the Board of Supervisors unless rejected on a 4/5 vote. If it is rejected, it would be returned back to the CCP to further refine the plan. And lastly, as Mr. Grant mentioned, funding from the state. The funding was based upon a number of factors, including county size, prior prison commitments, and prior parole supervision. The County of San Luis Obispo will receive a one-time planning allocation grant of $150,000, a one-time startup cost grant of $155,000, and our first-year allocation is roughly $2.2 million, which is based upon the start date of October 1st, 2011. And that concludes my presentation on realignment.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. And I have a couple questions, one from Supervisor Patterson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Salio, a lot of changes being recommended, and I'm curious to know if you anticipate an additional caseload for the probation officers. It mentioned that there's no set ratio defined in the order, and I'm just curious if you anticipate an additional caseload, or will there be revenue to hire additional officers if needed and keep a reasonable caseload?
Yes, the revenue will be available to hire additional probation officers to keep our caseload ratio at the status quo.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gibson, do I see you?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions, a little bit on terminology here. There's a couple of references on parole revocations for state parolees. First of all, it's capped at 180 days. What's the rationale on that?
The rationale is that they cannot be sent back to jail for a violation longer than 180 days. Yes. I think it was put in there to help control population
our
at
cost,
the jail.
Our cost. Okay. But parole violation is different from the commission of a new crime that might be charged.
Correct. This is a technical crime in violation of their terms of parole.
And I'm looking at a little bit of an outline that CSAC and the mm-hmm. Sheriff's Association. Then capped at 180 and received day-for-day credit. What's day-for-day credit?
Day-for-day credit is simply that for every day they spend in jail, they earn an extra day. So 180-day cap would mean they would do 90 days in custody. So they could be sentenced to 180 days.
Okay.
So if they receive
for their parole violation.
For their parole violation, if right. they receive day-for-day credit, they would actually spend a total of 90 days.
And that's on
good time, work time, correct.
Okay. Also in this outline, it says the non-sentenced locally do not have post-incarceration supervision time. And specifically, there's no parole tail for these offenders. I assume that means in terms of the parole system of the state, but we have the ability to follow them on probation?
Well, actually, in the model that I described on the sentencing options, if the court just sentenced them to do all their time in local custody, when they leave local custody, they will have no tail. They'll be completely out of the system.
So the sentence could be some jail time and then some supervision.
Yes, that was the hybrid model.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. That suggests to me the need for a lot of coordination with our court system. I was going to say a lot more, but I think we're starting to move into closer coordination on our court system on how they choose to approach this, and I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Yes, I agree with you. It will require a new way of looking at sentencing. So part of the planning part of the realignment is to work with the courts, the district attorney's office, the public defender's office, on these new kind of sentencing options and how we make those determinations on who gets sentenced.
And are we getting the sense that the courts have the flexibility to do that? I mean, we hear that there are mandatory sentencing in certain cases, but are we comfortable that that...
Yes. In AB 117, it did write into statute the split sentence where they can be sentenced to a certain amount of time in jail and then be on mandatory probation. So that's by statute.
That's been clarified. Okay. $2.2 million for the rest of the fiscal year or for a...
For the rest of the fiscal year.
All right. So in theory, that's three quarters of what we might be due?
Yes.
Okay. And the Community Corrections Partnership, I notice the Executive Committee doesn't include a member of the board or our CAO, and I understand that was actually specifically in the legislation. And I'm just curious how you envision we might be able to coordinate with, so we don't get into a question of whether there's a 4/5 vote to reject. I'm hoping we have a very constructive discussion heading in there. So
yes, and our planning group right now does include Jeff O'Quest from CAO's office, and Dan Buckshy has been involved in that as well. So we're very clear that we need to involve the CAO in the whole process.
Great. Well, we appreciate that, and I knew that that's the kind of constructive engagement that we expect, even though we might not be able to vote on this. I think we can. I think that's great. I guess my concluding comment, really, it doesn't look like we have a public comment on this, but my concluding comment is I think I'm really split on this. It's a little bit daunting to look at the workload that's being taken on. The amount of money, of course, from our perspective, is never comfortably enough, but I've been assured that you can do it. I'm hoping that we can exercise a great level of creativity on this in terms of alternative forms of incarceration, alternative forms of monitoring. I think we operate at a great scale here, which allows us to experiment with some things, frankly, that gets the job done, that does a better job than the old models of simple incarceration and the kinds of probation. So I'm looking forward to some good ideas coming from this, even as we launch into a challenging, certainly a big challenge.
I think there will be a change. You cannot have help but have a change in the criminal justice system with this type of realignment. And so I believe there will be some exciting things, some things that we've wanted to do for a while but not had the funding or opportunity to do it. And we're hoping that all these things will lead to better outcomes for public safety.
Great. Thank you.
And if I could just follow up before I go to my colleagues, I have several that want to also ask some questions. Chief, on that same subject, I think the board would appreciate it as you and the committee with the sheriff and so forth develop some of these alternatives if you would report back to the board. I think that would be very helpful for us and also for the public.
Well, we are planning to bring before the board. Right now, we're shooting for September 27th to actually present our plan for the board. Okay. We're hoping to have the plan in place prior to the October 1st start date.
Okay, great. Perfect. Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Hill. My question is regarding the additional workload for the courts, and with the state courts having cutbacks and layoffs and deferrals for trials and stuff, how is this going to affect the system?
There is an allocation that's coming directly to the courts for this. Part of this process, for instance, the revocation process and those kind of things, do not necessarily have to go through the courts, so we'll be working out that system. There also is funding for the district attorney and public defender's office that's separate from this funding that I listed in the PowerPoint. But we're trying to find ways to be more creative to take the burden off the courts and look at different ways of handling this. It's really going to be the revocation process that's going to be the most works for the court. The parole violation piece has been deferred to July 1st, 2013, but the local post-release community supervision violations, we're trying to find a creative way to handle that that process.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. And Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just following up along the lines of Supervisor Gibson's comments regarding the challenging nature of this effort and the unknowns, one of the things that is encouraging to me after hearing our sheriff speak at the local community workshops we've had and the anticipation of being in better control of these people who have committed crimes and offering programs in the county jail that will provide education and training and hopefully prepare them better for release. And I look forward to seeing what you will be proposing and anticipate a better outcome than we've been getting from the state prison system.
Yes, obviously worked very closely with the sheriff on this, and I don't know if Sheriff Parkinson would like to comment on some of the ideas he has, but our really what we're focusing on, our goal is to try to keep people from coming back into to jail, to not reoffend, to stop that recidivism rate, and taking some creative approaches to that.
Sheriff?
Good afternoon. Ian Parkinson. I just want to echo something that actually that Jim said that I think is really important part of this, is that, you know, first thing that this has done for us is really create better partnerships than I think that have taken place in the past. Jim's doing a great job leading the committee, but really, if you go back to February when you approved the women's jail facility, you know, the focus on that is programming within that jail. This has kind of taken it to an all new level. It's a different type of programming in the sense that we're dealing with an inmate. At that time in February, we're dealing with them for, you know, under a year sentence. Now we could get them up to 8 years sentence, which half times probably four. We're still kind of working through what that really means. But not only are we working on programs that will be geared toward keeping them out of custody, but also now we've expanded to including the Cal Fire Chief in fire camps, which is a huge component of this for them. It's a huge loss because a lot of these inmates that were being sentenced to state prison that were the non-non-nons were their fire crews. And so it's a significant loss to them. And Chief Lewin and I spoke about this, that he was really pushing his bosses to kind of be the pilot program here in this county. I know that other sheriffs are going to be severely impacted by this. Population-wise, they're not going to be able to deal with these numbers. I've actually had some conversation with some of them. If we did run a fire camp here, either in our facility or in another off-site facility, that they would be willing to ship us their candidates for fire camp, of course, with the money. We wouldn't take them without it. But I think it's really opened the doors to some really interesting programs and partnerships for specifically Chief Salio and I to work toward these programs. So it's exciting on one end. I have to echo what Jim Grant said, that the scary side of it is with no constitutional guarantees, we're hoping. And then the final piece that's kind of important going back to the February for me is that one of the unknowns or one of the concerns moving forward with that project in February was, of course, the staffing for that facility. I think this gives us a little bit of opportunity, provided the funding remains there, because what we'll be doing is we're going to be relieving, ideally, some of our overcrowding in the female jail by getting our modular units up and running, and our staffing levels will increase as a result. And so it'll be a perfect transition for us to go from our current overcrowded situation into the modular units and then transition into a new female jail. And so I think some of our staffing costs that we were looking at for that project will hopefully will be slightly relieved from realignment. So it's a benefit to us, I think, in the long run, but not without its significant challenges that Jim's leading the charge on.
Great. Thank you, Sheriff. Let me open it up to the public. I have no request on this item to speak, so I will close it to the public and bring it back to the board. This is a receive and file item, so I do thank the chief and the sheriff, and I also thank your involvement of the admin office as you move along developing the programs, which is important, and appreciate it. So it is received and filed, and thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we get to closed session, and I have requests to speak on closed session, beginning with Richard Margetson, followed by Reverend C. Height. Mr. Margetson?
Richard Margetson. To continue the ongoing discussion before your closed session on the franchise agreement for Los Osos. Something was said towards the end of County Council's response to my questions last week that I don't know actually came over on the air. I know it didn't come over on the radio, and I just want to make sure that there's an understanding that, however you want to term it, what was said is this is a permanent transfer of the franchise agreement to the county. It's not how it was portrayed in Los Osos, that it would be transferred to the county until the $2.2 million was recouped through whatever agreement was coordinated with the CSD and the county. And then it would be returned to us. If it's a permanent transfer and a sale or a purchase, a sale from the CSD to the county or a purchase from the county from the CSD, that's what it actually is. There's been very little, there's been no public agenda item on this in Los Osos. There's been no agenda item here at the board. It's all been through closed session discussions. This community has not had an opportunity to weigh in on this publicly, to either favorably agree to it or disagree with it. The problem we have is we lose, and I've said this before, but I'm going to keep saying it, until there's a public process, the community does not know that we are losing control of our ability down the road to control our trash rates. And in effect, even though Mr. Gibson disagrees with me, a franchise fee of this type is all it really is a kickback from the provider of the service to the district. It's paid for out of the rates that the customers are charged for trash service. It's not coming out of some other fund. It's part of the budget that is divided by the number of customers to come up with their monthly trash fee. It's basically a kickback from the provider to the agency that's in control. That fee, and it has been used twice in Los Osos, if administered properly, allows the holder of that franchise to adjust rates using that fee. And that's the concern, that if it goes to the county, we lose complete control of that.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Dr. Height, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos World Community Workshop. And in a closed session item is the Los Osos Community Service District bankruptcy court case. So I am on topic. And since this is a new board, I want to remind you that Eric Greening has established that coming to speak about your significant exposure is acceptable speech when you have this opportunity for the public. And I have spoken to this county's significant exposure since 2003. I've sort of made it an advocacy career of trying to point out where you can be sued so you can correct the problem and not be sued and not waste public funds that are so important to support your more fragile members of the community. Now, I'm sure by the prickling in my cheeks that my blood pressure is stroke level today, all because I went up and tried to access the problem and like a fool told myself, well, I'm sure it'll be okay. I'm sure I can just get in and ask for these two forms. One of your other citizens asked me to pick one up, and it is your county administrative office complaint form. And my frustration here is that when I go up and ask for this form, I also ask for your policy and procedures. The form is meaningless without knowing what the procedure is, and I get belligerence every single time I try to get this. If your clerk is handing out your form without a person understanding how to fill it out and what they can expect in the process, it's meaningless. Now, if your clerk wants to just follow human nature and badmouth me, I was calling on my cell phone to my answering machine so I can prove what I was saying and how I was saying it. I certainly couldn't have been rude, and I certainly could not have been yelling. I've lost my voice. I'm simply trying to advocate for myself. So I'm very disappointed because I'm only asking for this administrative complaint form because I can't access the civil rights charge form. And when I asked the board to tell me, give me your information, your take on what those agenda items on Los Osos, and that was A11 and A12, and we refused to answer the public. You refused to answer the senior disabled population at home that is watching on television. And that is just wrong. And that is a civil rights charge. So I'm going to try to work through your belligerent process of administrative complaint so that you can change, so that you can correct these problems so that you cannot be sued, that you cannot deny the public remedy. And I certainly appreciate when you are reminded that military families paid for the right for me to go upstairs and get this form without getting high blood pressure and without getting sick from it. My military family paid for my right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Height. Ms. Taylor, followed by Elaine Watson.
Good morning. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I have been concerned for a very long time about the questions and answers under the closed session. I have obtained a rules of procedure booklet from County Board of Supervisors. It says rules of procedure. In this rules of procedure, I see nothing about the problem of asking or a question of asking county council a question and getting an answer. If the county council knows the answer, he can give it. If he does not know it, he can say, I will defer this until a future date. We in Los Osos get the short shift, if you wish, on many questions that are asked, questions that should be answered, questions that have been tried to be answered by County Council, but unfortunately, there seems to be a stonewall approach to questions that are asked and County Council giving the answer. We need to have an open, democratic process. And it says so right here in this little booklet. This little booklet should be given to each one of you as you sat down as a supervisor, because it is the rules of procedure. Rules. You're not above them, nor am I. But one of the things that we have to have is an open democratic process for everyone, not just Atascadero, Paso Robles, but also for Los Osos. Give us answers or allow County Council to give the answers if he can or will.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Ms. Watson?
Good morning. Elaine Watson, Los Osos. I understand that this is a transfer, which is a euphemism for a sale for the franchise fee that's in discussion right now. The question about this franchise fee was asked at committee meetings and at the CSD in Los Osos several times now, and none of the CSD directors nor anyone else seems to understand what the terms of this arrangement are. No CSD director seemed to understand. So I'm wondering, how and when was this negotiated, and why doesn't everyone understand how this is actually going to play out? There are so many analogies, so many bad analogies to this arrangement, such as buying a house and continuing your payments in perpetuity after the loan is paid off. It just doesn't make sense. The CSD is, as you know, is operating on a marginal budget. It is barely getting by. Without these funds, no doubt, water rates will have to be increased, and that's another burden on the community. If this goes through, and it is a kickback because it's unearned income, if this goes through, will those funds be earmarked specifically for improvements in Los Osos in the future? We need to know the answers to these questions, because this is a lot of money for us. And it just doesn't, it's not an arrangement that makes any sense to anybody. So we do need to understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. That'll close it to the public for closed session. Mr. Jensen, a time estimate, please.
20 to 30 minutes.
Okay, why don't we, why don't we come back after closed session and report out and adjourn then, rather than wait until 1:30. So we'll be back in about 30 minutes. Does that sound good? Okay.